And now we find ourselves in the Minax Mini Mansion and Dungeonette. We are actually in the Dungeonette right now with all the tools of the trade, shall we say, for your very fascinating profession.
Thank you, Monica. Yes, we are. We're in the Dungeonette, and we are surrounded by lovely metallic things, including a beautiful handmade cage on wheels that's also a bondage bed, and a bondage chair, which is also a throne, which is also an electric chair.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You can hook that up?
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's kind of fun.
But not a full, I mean, it certainly wouldn't kill you. It just kind of gives you thrills in certain places.
Correct. Yeah. Certain in the nether regions, let's say.
Ah, and you can negotiate which nether regions.
Yeah, if negotiation is part of the agenda, why not?
Isn't it always? Not always. Sometimes you know them.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes they want you to surprise them because they trust you and you know what you're doing, so it's okay.
Right.
Yeah, it's not always fully heavily negotiated as in the that's more so in the community, in personal. But even then, once you get to know somebody, I mean, you can kind of know what you can do with them, what you don't.
Right. And that way you don't have to have a meeting, like a business meeting, before every sex experience.
Yeah, I have to say that that's not one of my favorite things to do, is go through the list.
Do's and don'ts.
Yes, exactly. Do this, don't do that. You know, it's kind of hard to remember.
Because then you feel like you're an automaton also.
Yeah, it can take away a little bit of the spontaneity.
Right.
Yeah.
And I see how people would like being surprised.
Right, they do. But I always tell people, though, if you don't give me some parameters, then you're going to might be unpleasantly surprised. So, you know, give me some parameters. Just don't worry about it being a checklist. So it's not a fine line. There's a spectrum.
Mm.
Yeah. I just want to point out, we also have a beautiful black leather sling to your left.
Yes.
One of my favorite things. And a big wench for suspension.
Oh, really? So you can lift people up? Wow.
Yep. Lots of mirrors, pretty pictures, whips, chains, etc.
Yeah, pretty pictures of Fakir Muzaffar, who's the father of the modern primitives movement. He basically invented the modern corset. And he's wearing all kinds of interesting corsets and piercings and doing all sorts of interesting, like, rituals.
And he is partnered with my colleague, Cléo Dubois, who has the Academy of SM Arts, the Cléo Dubois Academy of SM Arts here in San Francisco, where I'm the lead staff instructor. And we're getting ready to start an intensive. Yes.
Right.
An erotic dominance intensive for professionals this weekend.
This is sex. Everyone gets what they want. This is sexploration.
Explore.
Play.
This is Sexploration with Monica.
Sex is proof that God loves us and wants us to have fun.
Sexploration with Monica at sexplorationwithmonica.com.
Eve Minax is a dominatrix and sex educator. She teaches classes in all kinds of things. Not only, you know, how to be a good dominant, but also, I imagine you also cover how to be a good submissive.
Yeah, well, to some extent, we have wonderful volunteer submissives who are community players. They've been around for a long time. They have a massive amount of experience. So no matter what the level the student is, they're always going to learn from submissives who have, we call them full power bottoms, meaning they really know their stuff, they know their business, and they know how to give feedback. So the entire weekend is sort of encapsulated with this experience where each student gets to play with every submissive throughout the course of the weekend. And then at the culmination is then they get to choose their partner to play with for an official scene at the end of the weekend. So it's quite a jam-packed event. So yeah,
And very experiential.
Very experiential. Very, very, very experiential. And for everybody, too. So we have a lot of these bottoms who've been doing this for years because every experience is new and they learn something new. We've had some students take the course, you know, a few times, come back and audit, what have you. I took the original one, the very first one, 10 years ago with Sybil Holliday. And even I learned something, more than something, a lot of new things. Each intensive.
And you also teach medical play, and you have a class on enemas. It's you're going to need an enema for that, which is actually anything. You can think of any scenario where a person would definitely need an enema. Like, what was it you said, like going to get a Coke or something? You'd be like, well...
Yeah, I've had some... I've enjoyed presenting this class because I like to open with saying, okay, give me a scenario where you really think you couldn't have an erotic enema moment. And I've had people suggest... I don't remember all the suggestions. I remember one vague one of being at your in-laws or something. And I don't know, on the spot, I seem to come up with a pretty good reason how and why you could go on to do an erotic enema in that scenario.
Is there a favorite example that you like to give? Because I remember when you were last on the air, it was the Coke thing, that where you were going to get a Coke and there was a Coke stand and you had to go to this and you had to go to that.
Yeah. I probably remembered that. Maybe it was closer to the time when I last taught the class.
Mm-hmm. But you're teaching the class again soon. And where is it?
It's going to be at the Citadel, the San Francisco Citadel, which has a new location here in San Francisco. We're very excited about it. And I'm sure if anyone goes to the sanfranciscocitadel.org, I guess, and went to their calendar for events. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just so you know, so even if you're not into enemas, it's a really fun and educational class. And there's little surprises like, you know, should you be wearing plastic sheeting in the front row?
Oh, yes. Should you? No,
I like to say it's sort of a Gallagher, you know, take on that's sort of the surprise I do to the people. So if anybody goes now and they're listening out there, they're probably going to know that they want to sit to the rear, unless if they're into that.
So you are going to do an enema in class?
Oh yeah, I've done three simultaneously.
At the same time?
Yeah, I'm. I like a little three-ring circus in my classes to give people lots of information because everything has a spectrum, and I really feel as though this is my personal teaching philosophy. I can't say that there's only one way to do anything, and so I like to give a variety of... So generally, I try to work with one person who I've worked with before, so that gives you an example of, oh, I'm familiar with this person, and this is how we would go about doing this. And then I oftentimes take a volunteer who's just straight from the audience who I've never met before. And then if there's an opportunity, I might take a third person with whom I've had some engagement but maybe never played with before.
I really thought that every enema was the same, but now I'm feeling like clearly it can't be, because then, so the three-ring circus, you're kind of implying that there's a different act in every circuit, in every ring.
Yeah. Well, all the classes are different. I had one of my classes that does stick out in my mind. There was a male volunteer, and he came up, and he was volunteered by his owner, his mistress. And I started discussing what I was going to be doing with him. And then a woman came by in the back of the room, and I said, oh, you want to be a part of this too, don't you? And it was very spontaneous. She'd gone there for a completely different reason, was leaving on her way out, and said, wait a minute, I'll be right back. She comes back in, make a long story short, it turns out they're exes, ex-husband, ex-wife. So I'm administering an enema simultaneously to each of them. And then I have another woman on the side. That's a whole other story. But the ex-husband and wife team were hilarious. I couldn't have planned it any better myself, I swear. They're like, he's like saying, give her more. And she's like, you know, yeah, pump him up. And they're sort of doing this, you know, a very farcical kind of bickering back and forth around, you know, who's going to get the more explosive or painful or what have you enema. And it was really gorgeous. It was really beautiful. And I think it was kind of cathartic for both of them, too.
Oh, I bet.
But they weren't angry at each other, just to be clear. It was very playful, but it was hilarious. I really couldn't have planned it any better.
But, okay, so the painful, the filling up, the whole experience, people really like this, and it's part of their sex play.
Yes.
Not just as a preparation.
Exactly. So I talk about all the different reasons. I mean, that's why I say you're going to need an enema for that. The different reasons. And of course, the classic one is preparatory. And that's mm-hmm. what most people, I think, consider. They think of it as a chore, like, you know, mm-hmm. brushing your teeth or washing your face or what have you, doing mm-hmm. the dishes. Mm-hmm. But as some of us know, that the actual experience itself can be eroticized. That can bring on, you know, it's just sort of like feelings of warmth, feelings of fullness. And it can still be part of the preparation, but it doesn't have to be just this functional piece. It can actually be an erotic component. The ass, as the infamous Tristan Taormino said, is the great equalizer. So let's face it, most of us like having our asses touched in some way. And most people, I think, also kind of say, well, touching is one thing, you know, caressing is one thing, but an enema, who would want that? But if done and I think you know this about me, as I always say, it's not what you do, it's how you do it. So I can eroticize anything, pretty mm-hmm. much, any kind of touch.
The energy and the intent.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And I've watched actually some of your medical porns where you are the sexy nurse or the sexy doctor and you're administering treatments and they're like, oh no, doctor, I'm having this problem again. I can't seem to make my erection go away or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, whatever context they come in and they're like, oh, help me. And then you do all sorts of crazy and interesting things to them. And what's amazing to me is like how intense the scene is and how it has, I mean, it plays off of all of our fears and uncomfortablenesses about the Western medical system and our bodies and going to the doctors and all that stuff. Also, like, uses all that energy and then shunts it into desire. It's really confusing, but also very compelling.
Thank you. It's sort of an interesting journey how I got involved in medical fetish. I actually am one of those kind of non-Western medical practitioners. Mm. I don't, you know, believe in medical science lock, stock, and barrel, that is. I certainly believe it has its place. And when people used to contact me regarding those kinds of scenarios, I would say, well, no, I do these different things, these very methodical forms of play, but I will not do a medical. I refused for a number of years. And gently and slowly, I started to say, well, okay, I'll wear a lab coat and I'll be the mad scientist. That's a comfortable zone for me. One thing led to another, and I really devised, and it really stemmed from this sort of idea of like, wait a minute, Western science is, you know, Western medical science is so arbitrary in so many ways. And what is one of the main things that you get in your spam box every day? Like a Viagra ad or something, mm-hmm. right? Right. Some kind of erectile dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, penis pills.
Yeah. And so I started saying, okay, you know what? I am better than Viagra. So I started advertising. Actually, this started on Craigslist back in the day when you still could advertise on Craigslist. And I would say, let me cure what ails you. And I would list out the things that I could cure. And of course, one of those would be erectile dysfunction. So my doctor has turned into this rather tongue-in-cheek sort of personality where she sort of runs you through the whole. The de-kinkification process, of course, is to just completely outrageously kinky.
Right. Yeah, no, it seems pretty kinky. Like, oh, I'm going to cure your desires by giving you an enema and some urethral sounding maybe and, you know.
Yeah, the very first one I did was with a friend of mine and I came out as the nurse receptionist and I realized I didn't have a patient gown. This was just completely off the cuff. So I had laid out a piece of lingerie for him. And then I went back in and came back out as the doctor. I just did a quick, you know, change of glasses and lab coat or what have you. And he was standing there wearing the lingerie. And so this is all very spontaneous, but it was wonderful. And then I just looked at him and said, oh, well, how long have you, you know, had... how long have you been cross-dressing? And he says, well, the nurse, she gave this to me as my patient gown. And I was like, nurse? What nurse? And just kind of scratched something down on his chart. So then clearly within, you know, 15 minutes of being there, he's already labeled as a cross-dresser with the delusions of,
right.
you know,
nurses.
Beautiful nurses. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about one of your other, like, this was actually a live performance at the Center for Sex and Culture. Last week, it was a full festival of both performance art and kind of audience experientials, the This Is What I Want Festival, plus the Slow Sex Symposium, if you want to look up some of that online. You were one of the artists in the This Is What I Want Festival.
Yeah, that was a really amazing honor, and it was a very magical performance piece. The director being T.T. Baum. I want to just state their names. I may have the titles wrong, though. It's T.T. Baum and Tessa Wills are the two people. And sorry if I don't have the titles right. They wanted to conceptualize this idea around desire and the economy of desire. We have sex workers who are also performance artists of some sort, some of them, not all of them. So, and let's have them have an area where they can do their performance art live. And let's make this into an experiential where the subject comes in and they get greeted at the front by a receptionist. And then the receptionist sits and talks with them about their desires and kind of writes some things down. And then they go on to another person who's sort of this cross between Fantasy Island and what did he say he was a mix of? He was wonderful, the captain. And so then he would then talk about their desires with them. And then eventually they would get magically chosen to be with a charger. So we were all chargers, all of the artists. And we were in this big, beautiful space in, at the Center for Sex and Culture, which if you've been there, is a nice, big, open space. But TT had done this amazing job of putting these little saris down for each of our pods. We called them pods. They weren't really pods. They were just like our little areas. Mm-hmm. And then each of us got to design our area to our
specifications.
Yeah, to our, you know, to our desires. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Aesthetic.
Aesthetic, yeah. And so that was really lovely because each, you know, pod, if you will, each little space had its own sort of nuance. And so it was really, really, really powerful to have all of these performers and workers in there generating this energy simultaneously. So, and then after the person who would come to see you would have their experience, and each person, each charger, had a 5-minute offering that they were offering, and then the remaining time, which would be roughly 15 minutes, they would do some kind of work together. Then after they would have that experience, the person who came for the experience, then they would go off to, they would be taken by a page. The pages never left the people alone unless they were with a receptionist or with a charger. And then they got taken to sort of a chill area and got to chill out and relax and talk to people. And then there were also other pages who would be there to talk to them about their experience. So it was a really, you know, jam-packed, fully experiential piece for all involved. And the people who went through it would be there for at least an hour going through this process.
And so instead of being just like a regular theater performance, this was kind of like an audience experiential, like you or an audience member actually having an experience. So first you have to think of, you know, what is it that I desire? What do I want? What do I want from this experience? You know, you get this 5-minute offering and then you have to think of what am I going to do with the other 15 minutes? Describe some of the other artists that were offering things. I mean, you had a 5-minute Soaz trauma release. That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason why I went for that, if anyone knows me and knows my work, I'm a rather diverse person. I draw from a number of different sources, tantric and Taoist practices, and also, you know, psychoanalytic theory and body work, different massage therapy modalities, et cetera, et cetera. So in what's been interesting me lately is something called trauma release or trauma or tension release exercises. And they're used for PTSD, people who live with PTSD, primarily been working with them in Africa and the Middle East, and helping them release some of these traumas that they're going through during wartime. A lot of soldiers are getting this therapy as well. And what they're finding is that some people who can't get to that point of talking, they can release these tremors in their system. Because if you look at an animal is not neurotic. What will happen is if they feel like something has been predatory to them, they might run, find safety. But when they get to the safety and they know they're safe, they'll shake. Mm-hmm. And so what we've done in so-called humanity is we've dismissed the shake. No, you should, you know, take a pill for that. You should, you know, drown your sorrows in alcohol or whatever it is to get rid of it. Or just buck up there. Don't shake. Don't cry.
Man up.
Yeah, man up. Right. But they're finding that the TRE is an amazing experience for people to get them in either in conjunction with talk therapy or to get them to talk therapy or to just be an absolute substitute. And this is by, you know, people who are doing a lot of research on this, doctors, PhDs, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm sorry, I can't remember the guy's name who invented it, so I feel really bad. His name is Daniel something, I think. You can look him up, though, trauma release exercises. Anyhow, so what's been fascinating to me about that is it's the psoas muscle, which is your primal muscle, which is your, you know, sort of your sex muscle. It's the largest muscle in your body. It wraps around your entire hips and your pelvis, and it attaches your legs to your body. So the two movements, the two primary movements are thrusting, which is a sex act, and then also sort of marching or running. Mm-hmm. So it's your flight or flight muscle. And it's also just kind of this very important sex muscle as well. Mm. And so it's been dawning on me, especially if you can incorporate it with a certain amount of bondage and things, how you could get people to release trauma and tension from their bodies whilst accessing more sexuality. And this is just a little concept that I'm trying to work out right now. And I don't mean to be too lengthy about this. It's such a concept for me right now and that I'm really trying to tease out. And so this was a great experience because we worked about 6 hours all said and done. It was a 5-hour time slot set aside, though. So for me, it was more like a lab. I really got to work with people and I had most amazing results. I had people crying and I was very honored to have the wonderful Joseph Kramer come to my pod.
Ooh, exciting. The guy who did the body electric.
Yes, sexological body work. He's created the first certification in that. Just a wonderful human being. And, you know, of course, intimidating to have him walk into my pod to be to access his, you know, his presence and his
cool.
Become re-embodied. But he swore that he did, and he even Facebooked about it. So I was like, right on, Joseph. Thank you so much.
How many people, like how many audience members did you see, do you think, in the 5 hours that you practiced?
I didn't count, but I want to say between 6 and 8.
Okay. So you got to spend quality time with each person, but it was still like it was 20 minutes per person.
Well, so in order to do TRE, you have to...
What's TRE?
The trauma release exercises. Yeah. You have to first kind of wear the legs out a little bit, you know? So normally this is done in at least an hour's time frame when people do it either at home or with someone else. So I was really trying to encapsulate this in a very short amount of time. So the funny part is I would say, okay, we're going to do these squats together now. And then I would do these squats for my offering with them before I would lay them out. And I ended up doing, I can't tell you how many because I didn't count because people wanted me to do them with them. If I tried to stop and say, no, you go ahead, they'd be like, I'm done. And so I'd have to do them with them. I could not walk for 2.5 days after that.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Wow. What are some of the other experiences that other people were offering?
Well, there was a huge range. There was a mermaid there. She was fantastic, really lovely. And she had laying on this gorgeous sort of sea. Just imagine, you know, faux sea mermaid. And she had salt water and she would spray it on her body and you could drink tequila off of her body.
Okay. No, for many people, tequila is quite sacred, you know?
Yes, and it was beautiful. I did it, actually. She was the only one I got to visit with. Sid Blankovich was there, who's a wonderful self-titled queer porn person. But they did this wonderful sort of pseudo-wrestling choke thing. But it was, their pod was next to mine, so I got to see the work quite a bit. And it looked so comforting. It was like human straitjacket. I really wanted to do it, but I didn't get a chance to do that. Kirk Reed was there. He's you know, an amazing performer and sex worker. And I think his offering was teaching people how to kiss and, you know, had a variety of different interesting things.
How do you teach someone how to kiss?
Well, you've never done that?
Taught someone? No.
Oh, wow. It's fun. I actually got I'll never forget, a Valentine's Day card when I was 15 years old from a boy in the neighborhood who I'd taught how to kiss. And he actually managed to find a card that said, "Thank you, Valentine." And then you open up the card and it said, "Before I met you, I just thought my mouth was to keep my lips from fraying." Or my lips to keep my mouth from fraying.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Like the hem at the edges. I just thought that was, I'll never forget that card. And it was true. I did teach him how to kiss, but completely as a friend, platonic, you know, hey, if you're going to want to get out there and be with girls, you need to learn how to do that.
Right. But how do you teach someone how to kiss?
I don't know. Just like, you know, as you're kissing them, like, hey, you need to soften up, or you need to open up more, or you need to relax your tongue, or not too much tongue, or, you know.
Right. Well, see, I mean, there's different kissing styles, right? Like, so some people really like more tongue. Some people like more moisture. Some people like less. You know, some people are really freaked out if they have to wipe their mouth after you're done kissing them. Although, you know, for some people, that's normal as daisies and part of the process. And it's certainly safer. You know, saliva isn't super high risk of a fluid anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just funny because I've been thinking about this lately. It's also this thing where we are sensing each other's immune systems. You're sort of noticing whether or not the other person can pay attention to you, like how soft your mouth is, how open your mouth is, how much tongue you're using. Can they mirror and then send energy back and forth between your two mouths?
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, you know, what a conversation kissing is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's an entire conversation, you're right, and one sort of a great gauge, at least for some of us. I'm kind of notoriously known as a non-kisser, which is incredibly not true. If you know me very well, I just happen to find it to be an extraordinarily intimate act. And so therefore, I don't just kiss anyone. And that's just my thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And I totally dig how some people find that making out with several people in one evening is their routine and they enjoy
or
that.
Or energizing, yeah, or very interesting or stimulating. Yeah, but for some people, it's also that you're like, well, do I want my tongue in your mouth? And what's your mouth like in there?
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing?
Well, I've actually read that there's more germs on your hand. So there's more bacteria in a handshake than there is in a mouth kiss. And when I read that, I was somewhat comforted, but it still did not take away this intimacy act for me. It was not as much about hygiene for me as just about an act of intimacy.
Well, that and you're taking someone in, you're opening a part of yourself and letting them in, you know?
Yeah. Well, there's the old adage too that some whores don't kiss, that, you know, right, they'll fuck, but they won't kiss. And,
totally.
And I think I seem to have one of those hearts, even though I'm not a self-proclaimed whore necessarily. And so there was that. And Sadie Loon was there, who's an amazing performer and a sex worker. And she did all kinds of fun and interesting things.
Was selling stickers over her cervix for 50 cents. I got one. It's awesome.
It's a great sticker. Yeah, I love her
cervix
work. Pele, goddess Pele, was there. She was doing bondissage sessions, which I also do.
What's bondissage?
Bondissage. You haven't spoken to Jaylene Bennis yet. We need to get her. We need to get you and her talking. She is the creator of this. Well,
and it's spelled like bondassage, just so you can Google it. Bondassage.
B-O-N.
But it's bondissage, like a massage, right? Only with bondage.
Exactly. And sensory deprivation. So the person really gets taken on a wonderful journey. They get music in their headphones and earplugs and just restrained on a table and then receiving different types of sensation in their body, on their body. It's a total journey. So it's what's interesting is, and I think Jaylene would agree with this, a lot of us have been doing these things or similar things over the years, throughout centuries, I'm sure, even in some ways. But she knew how to create a sequence. So it actually has a serious sequence of events that occur. And people are really drawn to it, especially those who are wanting something a little bit more than your classic kind of sensual massage, but maybe not so much as to do extreme play. Although I would add, on that note, I seem to be the practitioner that people come to who do want to do more than they have, because of my experience in the realm of SM is much more vast. And I'm not really a masseuse, although I give a damn good intuitive massage, thank you very much. But to me, it's all of the touch is important. So whether it's a touch with a flogger, or a touch with my hands, or a touch with a piece of fur, or a cane, mm-hmm. They're all just as valuable and equally important in this scenario. And it's a matter of creating the symphony, if you will, with the body.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So as we're sitting here in the dungeonette with all the accoutrements around us, I heard that you are making some changes. You are dismantling the Minax mini mansion and dungeonette and looking for some new community.
Yeah, Monica, I am. Thank you for bringing that up. I am currently on the market here in San Francisco looking for either a shared live-work situation with some other sex-positive folk, and I'm not disinclined towards anyone, especially if they're coming from their heart, so meaning if they're a tantric practitioner or a sensual masseuse or dominatrix like myself or sex educator in general, but just sex positive. I mean, they don't even have to work in the industry at all. Just a sex positive household wherein we could support each other in each other's endeavors. Otherwise, I'd be looking for something singularly the way I've had this over the past 3.5 years. And it's been great here. It's been a beautiful space. And I love living alone and working on my own. But sometimes it can be a little isolating. So I'm kind of toying with this idea. So if anyone out there knows of anyone or if you know, if you're interested, you can contact me directly and see what we can come up with. That'd be pretty amazing.
And the best way to find you is your website.
Yes, I have two websites. The educator website is Eve, E-V-E, Minax, M as in Mary, I, N as in Nancy, A-X.com. And then my other one is mistressminax.com. I'd like to also just throw out there, in case anyone's interested in erotic dominance intensives with the Cléo Dubois Academy of SM Arts, just the address for that is SM Arts. So it's
SM-Arts.
Yeah, I was just going to say, otherwise we'd say smarts. SM-Arts.com. So EveMinax.com, MistressMinax.com, SMArts.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were just talking about the importance of collaboration. And not only so you don't have to like feel like you're reinventing the wheel by yourself, but there are so many interesting people, you know, doing sex positive work or, you know, that just want to be around open people, people that are open to different kinds of energies and consciousness. And it's really important.
It is important. And I think that San Francisco is kind of a hotbed, if you will, a mecca for the sex positive community. But what's interesting is I like to compare it to sort of New York in the 90s these days, is everyone's so busy running around, you know, trying to just stay in the city and not get pushed out, that it's hard sometimes to get a lot of us together and create that collaborative energy together. And as you and I were joking earlier, sometimes it seems like the way to get together is to work.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Be like, hi, okay, let's work on this together. Great. Do a shoot or do an interview or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Eve. It's been such fun to hang out with you this afternoon.
It's always a pleasure, Monica.
Thanks for making time as you're packing for your intensive.
Packing for the intensive.
Putting all those whips and change into your luggage. Thank you.
Thank you, Monica.
You can subscribe to Sexploration with Monica on iTunes and have new episodes delivered automatically. Or download free podcasts at sexplorationwithmonica.com.